All right, welcome to a brand new episode of Drag the Lake. I'm one of your hosts, Andy Malafrino. With me, as always, the late, great Pat George. Pat, how the heck in heck are you, dude?
Andy, I am splendid. It's a joy to be here, and I'm so happy that you are here as well, talking music with me.
Hell yeah, dude.
I was just genuine. I didn't... Yeah, nothing there. Nothing pre-recorded this week.
No, I was sitting there like, you call me gay?
Yes. Yes, very.
Well, that's crazy because I'm a gay man. Happy Pride Month, everyone.
Oh, yeah. Happy Pride. Hi.
Happy Pride. Where the fuck do we start? Pat, what have you been listening to?
Oh, me? Well, Andy.
Patrick.
I've been dipping a little bit. I've been dragging the lake, as it were.
Have you?
I've been going back to some bands that I've... So a thing I wanted to do was... There was a compilation that I loved when I was in, like, middle school. Like, basically since middle school throughout most of my life. 101 songs, or it's Short Music for Short People.
Yo,
101 songs.
That literally has one of my favorite songs ever, and it's
legitimately,
like,
yes,
yeah, like literally, what the fuck was it? It was the Green Day song on there.
Yeah, yeah, say that I'll meet you. I don't know all the words, but I know exactly.
The Ballad of Willem Fink, and I remember listening to that like. God damn it. Can you give me another verse and chorus, bridge, chorus?
Right. Isn't that like a perfect, it's like the, but it's also, so this is a Fat Records.
This is a good conversation to have. Cause there is an art to the short song.
Right. There's something about the, so even, so Guar's featured on there. But the, so like there's bands that were, this is, I think this album, I don't know exactly the year I got it, but I think that this album may single-handedly have formed my taste in music because it's got a little bit of metal-ish stuff. You got your punk, obviously. You got your Guar. You got your Green Day, like almost folky kind of stuff. You have Misfits. You got almost every single band, Black Flag, White Flag, everything. So there is... a song. There's a band on that compilation that has one song that I cannot find anywhere else. I can't find it anywhere else.
Is this compilation on Spotify?
No, it is not.
Really?
So this is a great topic to bring up. It's not available.
None of these songs will be on the playlist.
But they but Kill Your Idols have a song called "Gotta Get a Grip." And it is perfect. If you want to talk about, it's like, it's exactly what I love about songs.
If I could cut you off, there's playlists with most of the songs.
But the actual
album is not on Spotify.
Right. So there's
Kill Your Idols.
This song is not actually on there, but I was like, I don't know any other Kill Your Idol song. All I know of Kill Your Idol, I've heard of the band and I've checked them out before, but I don't know anything else because as far as I'm concerned, I love Kill Your Idols because of this song.
And that's a really funny point to bring up because especially in punk and that at that time period, because when this album came out, when was this, 99?
I think
yeah,
so.
Yeah, in 99, this style of punk, like early Warped Tour punk, was like one of the most popular, early Warped Tour punk was one of the most popular styles at the time. So there was a million bands like this. And in that, this has been a thing growing older that I've realized. There's all these bands you see and everyone just goes, these are the bands, they're the fucking ones you respect, and these are the good bands, and da-da-da. And then you just kind of, and then I've been going back and I go, oh, I don't like half of these. I remember, I think I talked to, oh, we were gonna do a topic, or did we? I can't remember if we brought it up or not, but I remember a big one was Alkaline Trio. Now, don't get it twisted. Yeah. I like a good amount of Alkaline Trio songs a lot. Like their album, God Damn It. I like most of those songs of that album a bunch. But generally speaking, I could take or leave most Bad Religion. Most Alkaline Trio. That's why I was remembering them, because they were the conversation we had where really good bands that don't have a lot of variety to their sound.
Oh yeah.
I always joke Bad Religion has about 5 songs. They're right. A really good band, but they have about 5 songs. And Alkaline Trio is a similar situation. They're a really good band, but they have about 5 songs. So a band like Alkaline Trio, you just kind of like go with the, and especially back in the day when, you know, you had to buy albums, you had to buy physical shit. You didn't have money to get all of these records and stuff. So you took people by their word and you just went, yeah, Alkaline Trio fucking rules. And now that everything's on Spotify, I have time to listen to a bunch of Alkaline Trio. And for me, like a lot of people love them justifiably, but for me, I go, oh, they don't really do it for me.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with this this compilation in particular, and I don't really know the motivation of it, like particularly why this was made, but this was also like, it almost seems like a writing exercise. Like this was something where he was like, I'm going to contact every band that I can think of, or every band that I've been in contact with, or whatever, everybody on these labels, like. Every band I would assume that was on Epitaph at the time is on there. Every band that's on Fat Records is on there. Every band, like almost any alternative or punk band you can think of the era is on this fucking compilation. And some of the people, I think, just submitted shorter versions of songs maybe they were working on, like Guar's version of Fish Fuck is just a shorter version of a long song that's on one of their albums already.
Oh, really? It's just a shortened version.
Or maybe this was like a first draft. Maybe this was a short song that they turned into a longer song because they're like, you know what? We really like the song. And it's a fun song. It's a fun song about fucking someone with a fish. But like,
this is from Fat Records, right?
Yeah.
And yeah,
I think there's one like, but then there's other ones that are like, I want to say it was the Dancehall Crashers, or it was one of the other bands, but it was somebody in there that's like that had a chick lead singer that is the whole song is about Fat Mike calling them and asking them to write a 30-second song for the CD. And then,
oh, really?
And literally, it's like a thing where they're like, but it's written perfectly. The harmonies are awesome. And it's something that's like, that's why I was saying, like, it's more like a writing exercise. And a friend of the show, he hasn't been on the show before, but friend of the show, Kirk Griffiths, has been somebody in comedy that has always tried to prompt his peers or his friends by saying like, oh, try to write from the perspective of objects, write as this, write from the future, write from the past, like different things that kind of help spark creativity. And I would like to believe that that's what this compilation was from Fat Mike, was saying like, hey, Dancehall Crashers, write a song about a 30-second song. And they're like, okay, hey, Fat Mike called us and told us to write a song for his little CD. And it's just like, but it's beautiful.
Yeah, I could see that because you have some songs on here like Blink-182.
Right.
They have Family Reunion, which that's one of the most it's turned into a meme now. That was just on Take Off Your Pants and Jacket, which sidebar on that, when I got Take Off Your Pants and Jacket, that's when my parents were chill, where they were like, we'll let you do what you want to do, but they always needed a little bit of a compromise, because there'd always be I'd be in middle school and I go, I want to get the new Limp Bizkit album. And they're all like, Fred Durst is retarded, so I don't know about all that.
Your mom.
And I don't want this to be a key factor of your personality. And I go, guys, it won't be. Don't worry.
Don't worry. I won't be doing a podcast about this years later.
I won't be doing a whole that was on our previous music podcast before we changed the name, but I won't do a whole episode on why it's the purest form of music. And then I wonder why
we can revisit that topic, by the way.
We should bring that up. And then I'll go the rest of my life wondering why no one takes me seriously. Anyway. But yeah, they let me Take Off Your Pants and Jacket, but I had to get the edited version. Cause they didn't want to, they want me to hear the fucks and all that. And when you listen to Sum 41 had a similar thing on, Does This Look Infected, when you get the edited version. But, yeah, the edited version of Family Reunion is very funny. It's, you don't hear a lot of words. So, and then Sum 41 had a similar thing on, I can't remember the song title, but they had a short song on Chuck. No, on Does This Look Infected. Let me pull that up real quick. What's the fucking name of the song? It was called ANIC. Mm-hmm. And like the lyrics were literally, you look like shit, you smell like shit, so why are you such a dick? You walk around like this. It's like, and it's like, so there would literally be stretches where you would just hear, bro, going through the edited music in fucking middle school is hilarious. Cause Limp Bizkit had another one. They had, I forgot what the name of the fucking song was, but on Hot Dog Flavored Water, they had this song where they literally went, fucked up kid with a fucked up life, fucked up hair and a fucked up knife, fucked up mom, fucked up dad. And I would just, it would like half of the song would be bleeped out.
This is how different our lives were. So I was listening, like I said, I probably got this in middle school or maybe just before, like around middle school time, whenever that was, right? And and one of my favorite songs on this was The Queer's I Hate Your Fucking Guts, which is the only lyrics are, I hate your fucking guts, I hate your fucking guts, I hate your fucking guts. And it was not edited whatsoever. So I think there's a little bit of a disconnect. I very rarely got an edited album, or was forced to at least, but that's also because I had no parents at the wheel.
Well, I grew up where you grew up in Florida, was there a lot of stuff to walk to?
Yeah, but I mean, it was, you would melt if you did it. If you walked for any amount of time outside in Florida, you do fear the risk of melting.
But I'm saying when you were like elementary school or middle school, like how did you get music? Did you walk to get it, or did you have to get driven like by your parents or something?
Yeah, dropped off at the mall, but or shows. Like if you would go to a show.
Oh, true.
I would get a compilation at a show, or if I went to a music store, either a chain or like an independent one in the area, I would usually Sound Exchange, like used records and stuff like that was a big thing. By us, we would go to like used record store. I say records, but like album, meaning like albums, like full, like CDs. But you would go there, and so I would get a compilation. I'd find the bands, the songs that I would like, and then I would find an album by them. Try to find the album that had the most songs on it for the cheapest price, because I'm still a fucking dumbass cheapskate. That's like, oh, I can get 17 songs for $4 as opposed to getting 10 songs for 17. But that one's probably a better album. I should have gotten that one. You know what I'm saying?
Like, no, I would do the same thing. I think I had I remember buying CDs, and like if you saw $20 on there, you'd be like, hey,
be great.
Hey, could you guys bring it up to the counter? Can you guys do me a quick favor and go fuck yourself?
Hey, do you want me to fuck myself here, or do I just go in the back and I just put this up my fucking ass? Because what are we doing here?
I remember I wouldn't go. I think if it was like $13, if I really wanted it, I'd spend that. But I remember $15 was the limit. In my head, anything higher than $15 seemed insane for a fucking CD.
Once I bought a new CD, brand new CD for $9.99. I wouldn't pay a dollar more for one. I wouldn't. If it's used, I would probably not go over like six. You know what I mean? Like, cause it's just like one of those things of like, come on. Like, again, I don't know if it was just, it was definitely being cheap, but it was also trying to get more bang for my buck. Like compilation is great because you get like fucking 22 songs for usually like $4.99. So that was always the best deal for me, because you would get exposed to so many. So like, and usually those are, for lack of a better word, those are the band's hits.
Let's put a pin in that real quick, because I had one thing I really wanted to say about edited songs.
Okay.
So, because I do also want to, I still want to talk about the short music for short people, and we'll talk about comps. But before we get too far away from edited songs, I got to give props to Eminem, because Eminem always had, he always went the extra mile with the edited albums. Because Eminem, to write an edited song, he would literally rewrite the verse.
What do you mean?
Do you remember that?
No.
Like, I'm trying to remember, My Name Is. So in the unedited version, he would go, "Hi kids, do you like violence? Do you want to see me stick 9-inch nails through each one of my eyelids?" And on the edited version, he would literally go, he's like, "Hi kids, do you like Primus?" You know, like, it'd say, I remember there was one where,
and I went, I do.
You're like,
I'm listening, yes.
Yeah. But no, I remember, because I would hear, like, because I said, I would hear the edited versions a lot and stuff like that. But yeah, Eminem, I always give a shout out to Eminem, because I think in the day and age where radio doesn't really fucking matter the way it used to, so radio only really matters to the people who aren't really talented. They kind of have that like summer banger. So they need the cosign from the industry to have legitimacy, because they're not going to have legitimacy from actually writing good songs. But because of that, because of like how radio's not a big entity the way it used to be, you're not going to see people putting in this type of effort. But I always give a salute to Eminem, because he would literally, because like we were saying before, you listen to edited Limp Bizkit, they're cutting out half the fucking song.
Yeah, yeah.
And Eminem literally is taking the time to write a whole new verse for you that rhymes the exact same way the previous verse rhymed.
This goes back to our last conversation last week about an opportunity that Eminem was presented with, an opportunity as an artist, a challenge.
Yeah.
It was given, instead of just being like, fine, just cut it out, I don't give a shit. He was just like, okay, well, let me give you something that you can play. And it's like, and how, you know, like, how likely was he to, like, it was it a cool opportunity to write a whole nother song or a whole nother verse, or was it an opportunity to show his creativity and to be like, here, you can, because otherwise you are going to just hear, like, because the amount of things that they cut out, like, do you remember like pop, like even like Papa Roach and shit like that, they take cut my life into pieces, right? Or what do they say?
Like, it would cut my life into pieces. They cut out Suicide, my last resort, suffocation, no breathing, don't give a fuck if I cut my arm healing,
you can't say cut my arm bleeding.
That's actually what made me like Sum 41 a lot, because Sum 41 had a lot of interesting edits like that, where they wouldn't necessarily, because they didn't curse a shitload, but they would have certain lines. I remember watching them, because when Does This Look Infected came out, that's when TRL was still popular.
Right.
And Sum 41 was pretty big then, so they would get on TRL. And they put out their video for Still Waiting. And I remember it always made me laugh, because they have the one line, you go, "Drop dead, a bullet to my head. Your words are like a gun in hand." And that would literally be like, "Drop dead, a bullet. Your words are like a gun." And I'm like, I was like, wait, what is he saying there? And then I looked up the lyrics and I'm like, oh, they're editing out like just normal words.
Right, because
because they're saying bad at, and like that made Sum 41 10 times cooler to me.
Right, right. That's what I thought about, the same thing with.
Like, and then they put out Underclass Heroes, and I wanted everything bad to happen to them.
But the same thing happened with me with the Papa Roach thing, where I'm like, you can't say suicide. You can't say cut. He cut his. But they,
yeah.
But, do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's weird when they start. Like, if you're going to say fuck, okay, I guess you can't say fuck on the radio or whatever. But when they were cutting out, like, suicide, or the same thing, Offspring. What was it? The Kids Aren't All Right. Like, there's one part, Jane committed suicide and died or something like that. They cut that part out or whatever.
Yeah.
But there, it's weird that, like, the things that they thought were dangerous to listen to and like the, it's like just subject matter, but every other band didn't seem to notice, because it's like, and it's maybe it's even an homage, if you will, to like censored movies on TV. You know what I mean? Something like where you're just like, oh, what are you frankly telling me that you can't go here? You know what I mean? Like, nobody would say, are you frankly telling me I can't go somewhere? He said, fucking, are you fucking,
bro,
you know what I mean?
That's what streaming killed.
Yeah.
Is,
oh yeah.
That, I miss it.
Unnoticeable or
no,
perfectly seamless censorship.
Very noticeable, bro. Censored movies on cable were one of my favorite fucking things as a kid.
Frankly, I love them.
Like, frankly, I heckin' like it. No, I would, if I saw like Pulp Fiction come up on just a cable network, like FX or something like that, I would go out of my way to watch it, because yeah. The way that I can't remember a specific example. I just remember the way that they would edit it would be so fucking ridiculous, to the point where like, why, like, you just don't have to show Pulp Fiction. Like, just show another movie.
Yeah.
There's probably another popular movie you could just show. My favorite one was Snakes on a Plane.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, the famous snakes. Line. That, no, dude, you are underestimating how fucking stupid their edit was. Because they have to edit to like the movement of their lips and yeah. like the tempo of it and stuff like that. And so the famous line, for anyone who doesn't know, he's like I've about had it with these motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane. And they edit it to, I've about had it to these monkey fighting snakes on this Monday to Friday plane. Wow. You know, those Monday to Friday planes.
Yeah. The ones that take the weekend off. Right. Nobody fights on the weekends.
And they often get full with snakes that only fight monkeys.
Yeah. Monkey fighting snakes. Yeah.
Which, what the fuck are you worried about? If they're monkey fighting snakes, you're good on the plane.
Yeah, do you have any monkeys on the flight? Then you're fine. Idiot. I think unsynced, or when they even try to match the thing, the lines or whatever, the mouth movements or anything like that, it doesn't matter if it's not what's actually being said. It doesn't even matter if you perfectly seamlessly have the same person, because a lot of times they'll have a different voice doing it, but even if you have the same person perfectly auto corrected, everything like that, audio synced, everything, it never comes out perfect. But with, like, if it's just a record, or if it's something like that, if it's like Eminem or something like that, then obviously you don't have to sync anything like that, and you have an opportunity just to write. But I wonder if it was in that same vein of like, well,
my nostril red.
Oh, it looks a little bit, but it
yeah. Why does it look like? Sorry, I'm like super autistic and can't focus.
It did kind of look
just
like
a shadow.
It's a shadow that looks kind of like blood.
Yeah, it literally looks like I have a... That's going to bother me. it literally looks like I have a huge fucking blood blister I got to pop. Anyway, I apologize for that. That was bugging the absolute shit out of me. Yeah, I've also heard with movies, there'll be... Because a lot of times they edit it in post and they do shitty voiceovers. But I've heard sometimes they would they would do an extra take for when it went to TV, and there's some directors that fucking hate that shit. So I forget who it was, but there was one director that when it came time to film the 4 TV version, whether it was good or bad, he's like, we're doing one take and that's it.
Oh, wow. And that makes a lot of sense now.
And I've said before, I always respect a good fuck you. And that is a top tier fuck you.
That's a very delicious fuck you.
So we got a little sidetrack. You brought up the topic of compilations, and we've talked about them many before. We're, you know, me and Pat are big fans of everything Warped Tour, and those were probably the kings of the compilation. I know for me, you were talking about like short music for short people was a huge part of what determined your general music taste going forward in life. For me, it was essentially, it was three things. stuff my when my brother got to high school, he met a bunch of dudes who listened to punk and ska. So it was stuff he introduced me. It was everything on the Tony Hawk soundtracks and Warped Tour compilations. Those are like the three big things that determine my long-term music interest.
Yeah, I would say overall it's kind of the same with me, because I would go to a show. So once I learned, I would go to a couple shows. I went to a couple shows with my brothers, and I think it was the first show I went to. They had the band All was playing, and the one of the members of All is a music producer, Bill Stevenson.
All's like a punk rock super group, right?
All is, except for the lead singer, is the Descendants. So All is the same band, I think. Pretty much everybody is the same, but it's just different. Instead of Milo, it's a different lead singer and different
songs.
Which makes
sense, because I gotta be honest, I like the Descendants. Lyrically, gets a little weird sometimes.
Yeah, and also the guy for All sounds like a kind of a younger version of Milo. I don't know if younger is the right way to put it. It's just a different version. Like, he has a very, like, a pretty voice, like a melodic voice, but I think he's actually maybe even a little bit better of a singer.
Oh, okay. No, I like the Descendants a lot. I just sometimes lyrically, it's just all these songs about like all shucksing your way into pussy or something like that. And you're it gets a lot. It gets a lot. And you're like,
I just loved you so much. Like, it's very emo for the age, for sure. Like,
I've always said this about the Descendants. For anything I can make fun of them about, you listen to the Descendants and you go, oh, that's why most of emo and punk and pop punk sound the way they do.
It's a direct
reason why early Blink 182 sounded the way they sounded. You know what I mean? Like fucking Dude Ranch just sounds like a Descendants cover album.
I ironically liked All, which was the band that came after Descendants, more than the Descendants, and didn't even realize that they were the same. But I was just like, man, they sound very similar. Once I discovered the Descendants, I was like, man, they sound a lot like All. They're kind of biting their style.
But I had that I went to go see Run the Jewels. It was like the third or fourth time I saw them. Uh-huh. And they were outside at, used to be the Electric Factory, now the Franklin Music Hall. They're doing this. It was actually really cool. It was this like summer concert series, but it was sponsored by Goose Island. And like Run the Jewels, those tickets are going to run you depending on where they are. Like, I remember I went to go see them inside at the Franklin Music Hall, and those tickets were probably like $40 a piece. But because it was sponsored by Goose Island, tickets were $20 a piece, and they had like $5 Goose Island all day.
Oh, wow.
It was a fun fucking day, because Goose Island, you're not getting that for $5 in Philly.
No way.
And it was a pretty fucking fun day. Run the Jewels, they didn't do it wasn't as long as a normal set, but they did like an hour, and I'll take an hour for fucking $20.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they did like 45, but either way, 45 to an hour, that's $20 worth of Run the Jewels in my book. That's good value. And one of the bands that opened for them, I'm listening to them, and I'm like, damn, they really fucking sound like Jane's Addiction. Like, really sound like fucking Jane's Addiction. And then we hear the band name, and I look it up, and I go, oh, because we're listening to Perry Farrell sing.
Oh, wow.
That's why they sound. But you know who it was? I forget the name. What? Wait, Perry Farrell. Yeah. I forget the name of the band, but he, apologies, everyone listening, I'm looking it up. He was in a band that is essentially a bunch of famous rock musicians doing cover songs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was basically a super gig. Super famous cover band.
Jeez. I'm
trying to look it up.
Was it that wasn't Velvet Revolver, right?
No.
I'm trying to think. Like, or did they have original songs?
Velvet Revolver?
Yeah. I really wasn't big into them, but I feel like that was the same. That's the same idea of what you're talking about. These older rock dudes that are start their like a super group. But it was
I can't remember. I'm having trouble looking it up. I'm not gonna waste too much time trying to figure this out. But yeah,
So this is maybe not this is not like a regular thing. Like, this is just a side gig that he kind of does.
I think they did it for a minute. You know what I mean?
Charity
I think
thing?
that I think they did it for a minute and shit like that, but they, you know, I think it was more just like, yeah, we want it, which I get, yeah. You know what I mean? You see fucking John Mayer, like, is just in the Grateful Dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which that has to be like, if you're John Mayer, that has to be so fucking sick.
That's gotta be surreal, right?
Like imagine if Refused called you up. We're like, Pat, we need you on bass.
I'd just be like, okay, yeah, sure. Like, I don't think I'd ever get used to it.
Yeah, that wouldn't full. I don't know if that would fully fucking set in.
It would never totally. But yes, I think there's still like that, because they probably still have a desire to play music. They know the song. They're, why not play all, like, if it is a group, a super group of people, if you got people from Poison, or you got people from, you know, this Jane's Addiction, you got people, it would be fun for each one of them to play those songs in a little bit different, make them a little bit fun. Yeah, why not do something like that? That's fucking cool as shit. But like, so what was the you were going to see them and you were noticing the Perry Farrell thing? Is that was the point of that?
Yeah. I was just like, this guy sounds like the dude from Jane's Addiction. And then I looked up the ticket and I saw who the band was on the ticket, and I looked up the band. I go, oh, because it's the lead singer of Jane's Addiction.
Also, you wouldn't think of that lineup for Run the Jewels and the guy from Jane's Addiction, his side piece band.
I'm trying to remember who else was on that show, because that was like a very similar to how Jesus Piece booked their thing, where it went like heavy pop punk, like weird trance metal. It was a good booking to get you ready for the main act. So having like a rock band like that before Run the Jewels was very good.
I was saying, like, when I got to see that band, I didn't realize how perfect it was. But he's also the drummer for the Descendants and all Bill Stevenson, I believe his name is a record producer. He's a producer. He has the Blasting Room. He's produced Propagandhi albums. I think some of the bands that were there that evening, Pennywise, all obviously Descendants and stuff. And they had compilations there. And that was the first, like, that was when I discovered. So the very first show I went to, the very first band that I saw directly influenced my entire musical, like, intake. My taste from then on was going to be, so even now to this day, I use Discover Weekly on fucking Spotify or whatever. Shout out to Spotify. And that's, to me, that's just like a new compilation I can listen to each week of like a new kind of like that's how I intake music. If you say, here, listen to this record, I'm going to be like, all right, I guess so. Or if it's you or like somebody else that I suggest or that I trust, like John or somebody, I'll actually give it a shot. But like, it's a lot easier for me to discover new music or things that I like, like through a composition like setting, that kind of thing. It's even though you don't have that, we don't have those really anymore. That was how I listened to, that's how I discovered new music for a long time, was getting a compilation for a pretty reasonable price. There's a couple bands that I recognized on there that I was going to check out, but then there's a bunch of bands that I didn't know.
Well, and
to me, those were always like, those were the songs that, those were always like my favorite songs by those artists until I actually got to know them more and other songs.
Yeah. And the benefit of the compilation, it's like why the compilations work so well for a lot of people. It's the same reason why, like, say you have like a 2-hour movie and you're like, I don't know if I want to invest that much time. And then fast forward, you just binge watched 4 hours of a TV show.
Right, right.
It's because when there is a quicker off-road on something, because the TV show, if you want it, it could be a half-hour investment or it could be a 4-hour investment. You have all those options. The movie is a 2-hour, 2.5-hour investment, or you're really, like, why even do it?
Exactly.
And that is a similar reason why a compilation, or for you, like Discover Weekly, is a better investment, because there's lower pressure, because a whole album is, you're locked into 30, 40, 50 minutes. A compilation, pick a song or two and get the fuck out of there if you want. Discover Weekly, you know, song or two, get the fuck out of there. And I think that's why that format is it's a better way, especially to get you introduced to new music. And thinking back, like, you know, we always joke, my favorite band, Gallows, you know, they came from me listening to a Warped Tour compilation just because I was listening. Just every year I'd always get the Warped Tour compilations because you'd go to Warped Tour and they'd be like $5. And I would buy one in the beginning and just try to spend the whole day not trying to break it. And I was listening to it, and yeah, Gallows popped up, and I was like, oh, this is the coolest shit. What the fuck is this? And then you get deeper into that. That happened to me too with I gotta give a shout out to Epitaph because they put out this shit. I forgot how I got my hands on it, but they put out they had a tour in 2005 where it was Matchbook Romance, which I'm always surprised I never hear about them anymore because I feel like this was like the first time I thought about them in a while. I feel like they were actually pretty big when I was younger. I felt like they were big with the gals and shit like that.
Yeah.
And whenever it comes to remembering bands, to like when we were in high school and stuff, you never hear people bringing up Matchbook Romance.
Yeah.
But it was Matchbook.
They had a lot of longevity. I think they burn hot quickly, or what is it called? They burn bright. Their star burned bright, but out quickly, something like that. You know what I mean?
And
like,
that can fuck you a little bit because then you get more, you get more like superficial fans when you have that like big rise and people are getting into you because you're the big thing at the moment. But if you have a slow build, then you get more hardcore fans.
Well, I always loved about compilations, and this kind of may even tie in with Matchbook Romance. Maybe they were the first like kind of casualty of this thing, but like, I think I loved the compilation because it was always like whatever album like bands started to put out like that would like, because we don't really have, there wasn't a lot of, there wasn't a music video channel or a radio for a lot of that music for a long time. There was like bands didn't really have a single, like there wasn't like a single or a hit from each album that like, so like one of the biggest things that I noticed from like Short Music for Short People was a lot of the songs that happened to be on that particular compilation were the most sing along songs at a show. So when I was, I like, for instance, one of my favorite bands growing up was No Use for a Name. And even when I would see them live, or even on their Live in a Dive album, the live CD that they put out, the song from Short Music for Short People, Sarah Fisher, is they're everybody in the crowd is singing it.
Yeah.
Those things where like they have that one. They also have, there's Sarah Fisher, and there's also, I think their song from, they also have another one about Kiss. It's something about like, they're just naming, which members of Kiss they like the most in which order, and that like they like at the end of it, it was like one of those things where like, all right, you know what to do at the end, and then they say, and Peter, and then they just point to the crowd and everybody goes, you're the cat. Like everybody knew the short songs, and it's like one of those things of like, that's their hits, that's what you could put out there. So I think bands became more strategic, and maybe they only started writing like a hit, like they were like maybe Matchbook Romance, maybe, I don't know, because I didn't really follow them. Maybe they were like the first kind of like one hit wonder of that thing. Maybe that was the main thing. I don't know though. I didn't really give them much.
It's hard to tell. I also did not listen to them a bunch because I'm in high school. They're for girls. I'm not like getting into them. And then they never like popped up again. And it wasn't a band, and let me say this, because saying they're for girls isn't necessarily a dig per se, because like All Time Low, they're for girls.
It's a lane. Yeah.
But a poppy song, still a poppy song.
Yeah.
You know, I meant to bring them up last week when I was talking about like the most pop punk emo-y bouncy songs. Cause I threw them on that list because they had, like, there's always the classic Dear Maria, Count Me In. That one fucking goes off. That has a top-notch what's it called when you play the same chord? Key Change. It had a that song has a top notch key change in it, and then they have this song called Coffee Shop Soundtrack, which epitomizes the emo song with the slightly off kilter drum beat that has like the snare on the and of two, and it makes it feels like a little, and then we get back into the regular snare on two and four and stuff. But like with those songs, those all like all time low would be a band in high school you didn't loud and proudly admit you liked, but a catchy song's a catchy song. You can't really deny that Dear Maria Count Me In is not fun to fucking listen to. But Matchbook Romance, I think they were similar. Do you remember a band called Stray Light Run?
No, actually, I don't know who that is.
You know why you don't?
Why?
Because you're a boy with big ass balls.
Know that.
but they were another band that didn't get overly popular, because they were like just for girls. I've noticed this, by the way, about music in general. There's various ways to get really popular, because you have to either appeal to like dudes who want to like kill themselves at your show. You have to appeal to kids, and this is if you want to get big. And if you appeal to women, you also have to appeal to gays. You noticed that? Think about the artists that are big that mainly appeal to women. They're also heavy. Lady Gaga,
Kelly Clarkson.
Well, she's not that big anymore. She's huge. Beyonce.
Uh-huh.
And I noticed this with Megan Thee Stallion and Cardi B, is when they started doing stuff to appeal to like LGBTQ. Now, I'm not saying they're like, oh, they're secretly homophobic, but there's nothing about Megan Thee Stallion or Cardi B where they were overly like, I need to make sure the gay community knows I love them. You know what I mean? Here's the thing, you see it a lot with female rappers, is they're appealing to women because they're saying all that boss bitch shit that women like, but you know, now don't get me wrong. I've heard a Megan Thee Stallion song, and I've heard a Cardi B song that's got a good beat and it's kind of catchy. And like when it comes on, you know, what was the fucking one? You're like, y'all know that's right, big bad pussy, bam 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 bam. That one's catchy, but I'm not gonna be caught dead bumping Cardi B in my car. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
So no matter how popular you get with the gals, if you're just a female rapper talking about how good your pussy pops and how wet it is and yada, 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 you're not really getting that many guys listening to it. So you're like, ah, shit, how do we make up more on the back end? You're like, I know, we got to appeal to the gays.
Like,
you broaden the fucking message and bring them into the fold. Cause that's how you make up all the loss on all the fucking straight dudes that aren't listening to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Or acceptance of everything. Of like, no matter who you are, we are accepted. But then I'm going to talk about why I'm the hottest person in the room, but, but we are all the same. We're basically all the same, you know?
Well, cause also too, when it comes to the reason it's in like Megan Thee Stallion and Cardi B's interest to do that, because you know, like I feel like 50% of gay dudes are just doing an impression of a black lady they met.
Right. Yeah. please.
Yeah. You're like, oh yeah, you talk like that Dennis from fucking Wisconsin. That's how you talk, buddy. Cool, dude.
Cool. Dude.
That's totally how you fucking talk, dude. You just got dick to the back of the throat, and now you're like, child. Like that, is that how it works? The cum seasoned right, it makes you talk all sassy. Anyway, I love the gays.
Everybody,
I absolutely love them. Now I get, listen to New No More Heroes. I gave you guys a huge shout out over there. But yeah, we got a little sidetracked.
What's new?
Yeah, I'm this is how I'm coming out as gay.
Oh shit.
All right, now okay, now I can do my real voice. Hi, Patty. I wanted to say one more thing about like short music and stuff like that, because there is an art form to it, and obviously if you're trying to be popular, you can't have a whole album of like minute long songs or 30 second long songs. You're not going to like this average person's not going to want that. But we talk about them a lot. Perfect example, band like Knock Loose. One of their most popular songs is Counting Worms. And now a huge part of it is because that riff in the beginning of it is just fucking nuts and it's infectious. And it's one of those things, especially as a hardcore fan, it's like the second you hear it, you just perk up and you're like, I want to hit something. I want to hit something. I just had that with an Amir song. Amir's been doing that a lot for me. They'll have breakdowns where you'll just be in the middle of something and then you just get this overwhelming urge to be like, I have to tear down something beautiful. So the thing with like Counting Worms with Knock Loose that is great is, one, the riff is insane. It's infectious. But the benefit of the short song, and I think this is applicable to a lot of the songs on Short Music for Short People, is the benefit of the short song is you're left wanting more. If it's if it's good, they didn't give you a full song, so you want just a little bit more. You want just a little bit more, and then it gets you. Because I know I've said this before, every time I hear Counting Worms, I don't listen to it once. I listen to it about 3 or 4 times. And now that gets you in a mood to be like, oh, I'm going to listen to some more Knock Loose. So now you're like into the band. I think as a band, it's not necessarily, like I said before, it's not smart to have all your songs be 30 seconds. But there is a benefit to have, especially in the day and age of TikTok and shit like that. There is a strong benefit for you to maybe every album or two pump out a short song to get really, like it worked for, we talked about earlier, it worked for Blink-182. What I mean, they have a short song, it's easy to burst out, and it's over the top offensive and all that shit with the Family Reunion and shit like that. And then the other one where they go piss shit, cum cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker, yada yada yada. There's honestly a benefit to having a few short songs in here, because you start off going like, the fuck did they say, and now you're listening to Blink-182.
Right. I think in general that's kind of the thing with this is I truly do believe that was in the intention of making this compilation was, all right, I have the ability, because it's something that I would do if I had my own record company. And for the longest time when I was a kid, that's what I wanted to do when I grew up, was be a producer or have my own record company and do fun, cool projects like this to put forward the bands that I liked the most, the ones that I thought were most worthy of like of the production or the care or anything like that. But something like this seems like and it kind of goes to what you're saying and what we kind of started out by saying, this seems like it was like a fun writing exercise to give to your friends, because the whole reason I checked out Kill Your Idols again was because I thought of that song and how that's still one of my at least top 10 songs of all time, and it's like less than 30 seconds.
I gotta listen to that again.
It's only on that album, it's only on that compilation, because I can't find it, or at least it's not on Spotify anywhere. So
it's probably on YouTube.
One of their greatest songs, in my opinion, one of the greatest songs of all time that I've ever heard, was written just on a goof of saying, hey man, can you write me a 30 second song? It could be about anything. It's just got to be 30 seconds. It could be about anything.
So, So you're bringing up a really good point about it being a good writing exercise, which it is, because like I've experienced that where, like for me, I'm a comic who kind of like, I curse a lot. I get more excitement out of lean into being more offensive and stuff like that. But then sometimes I've been in scenarios where, actually, perfect example, I have this one joke where I talk about R. Kelly, and I used to be where I talk about R. Kelly and, you know, the P tape and stuff like that. And I used to be, when I would tell the joke, I'd be really harsh and just straight up like call him a pedophile or say something about like, you know, effing kids and shit like that, stuff like that. I don't want to get the video fucking flagged.
Gotcha.
But then I was doing a show one time, and I had an all black audience, and black people generally speaking, they haven't disowned R. Kelly the way white people have.
Right.
So I'm going into this with self-preservation, being like, oh, they're probably going to get real pissed if I hit this hard on R. Kelly. So in the moment, like, I play an audible, I rework I essentially say the same thing, but I rework the phrasing that makes it come off not as harsh. Still says the same thing, but I kind of just like make it less harsh because I know they're not going to go for this if I go a fucking 10 out of 10 hard on this. And then I say that and they fucking laugh and I go, you know, that's actually like a more creative way of saying it.
I'm not
just like in your face being like, oh, Kelly.
Yeah.
And so there are actual times when putting these limiters on yourself, you find it forces you to be a little bit creative. So there is, so, you know, if you're used to writing 3-minute songs, if you like give us the same effect, but do it in 30 seconds, it's forcing you to be more creative.
Right. And well, are you going to try to write just a little short, you know, verse, chorus, verse, or are you going to try to write a bridge? You know what I mean? Like, or are you going to write just 30 seconds of a song and just stop? Are you going to do, is it going to be, you also get to show more of your personality. You get to show more of anything else because you're also showing, like, are you going to do a joke? Are you going to do like, again, like I said, Kill Your Idols. It was not a fucking joke. They went hard. It fucking rips. And it's like one of those things where you're just like, whoa, what the fuck was that? But
yeah,
but also you break them. It's the same thing that you were just saying right before I said it was like, yeah, if you're writing if you're doing an album or something like that, throw in a couple short songs because it's just a good exercise to get you pumping out a song. And it could be anything. And when there's, you need limitations. You need those limitations in art sometimes. If anything, just for a little direction, just to say, write me a song. And only it's got to be 30 seconds. Go. Anything. Go. Could be fast. Could be happy. Could be sad.
Sorry. When you said go, I was like, okay. No, you just made me realize too. Let's get rid of,
do a 30-second podcast.
Yeah. Pat, how you doing? Cool. Later.
Oh, man, cool, man. Hey, what are you listening to? I don't care. I gotta go. Bye.
That actually reminded, you know who Brett Rayborn is?
Mm-mm.
Wait, I want to make sure I'm saying,
hey, Brett Rayborn. Is he in Bad Religion?
Yeah.
Is he really?
No.
Oh.
Oh, no, Ray Bold.
Oh, no.
How do you say it? I've been saying his name wrong this whole time.
Wow.
Raybold. He actually has a really funny play right now on like Off-Broadway or something. It's called Off-Broadway, Race the Movie, the Play. he's a really fucking funny dude, but he has this podcast. I don't know if he still does it, but he did this podcast called Just the Plugs. So you go on and you're like, hey, man, it's great to see you. So thanks for being here. It's like, yeah, dude, thanks for having me. So he's like, so what do you want to plug? And then you just plug your stuff. That's, and he's awesome. He's like, cool, man. Have a great day. Like, what's fucking?
Damn, that's,
like,
a great idea.
And it'd be one of those things where you would be like, oh, this is, you, like, you know the whole premise, you know the whole joke going in, but it's still funny.
Talk about retention. And you could get great guests on that show. That's a great, dude. I wish you didn't just tell me that, and I wish I could have thought of that somehow. Cause that you could get literally anyone as a guest and just be like, hey, could you just come on my podcast? It's called Just the Plugs. All you have to do is plug something.
Yeah, it's so fucking funny.
Holy shit, dude. That's a great idea.
It's actually probably better you didn't do that, and then you get deep into it, and you find out he's been doing it the whole time. Wait, why did I say that?
Because I said 30-second podcast.
Oh, the other thing I wanted to say, and I do, we might have to wrap up early because I am full of piss.
Who isn't nowadays?
It's the way inflation, dude. Got more piss.
You've been listening to a lot of Gallows lately, haven't you? You're full of piss, eh, mate?
No, the other thing, what was I gonna say? Oh, the other thing about the album is, from a marketing standpoint, you gotta give Fat Mike a lot of credit because it's a really clever idea. Like, oh, this album has 101 songs. That's so many songs. Like, really clever idea. Really easy for a bunch of punk bands who probably half of them have day jobs.
Yeah.
Really easy thing for them to put together. You know, it's like, let's just write a fucking 30-second song. I'm sure Fat Mike will give him $100, $200 to go record that real quick on an afternoon. Right. You know, shit like that. And then it's super marketable. The art on it was real fun with the fucking hot spaceship chick. And I felt like all of us as kids were the little aliens being like, yeah, oh, touch my boner.
Yeah, hanging out with all those boobs. Man.
Yeah. And then, yeah, it's just a perfect way to give you a quick sampling of 101 bands.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you're only gonna listen to the beginning of it. And truthfully, probably the last 30 bands did get a little screwed. You know, realistically, the last 30 bands aren't getting that listened to, but it's still, you're still getting through a lot of bands before you get bored of it.
I would actually argue I would get to the point where even at the end, I was going crazy because I wanted to listen to like the Misfits. Like the Misfits were the last song on the album. And
really?
And to get to it, you had to listen. So at least on my CD player, I had to listen to 99, like, and it was like a minute and a half. So, which by the way, at that time felt like crazy amount of time. Damn. Actually, you know what? I am so full of piss too. I got to piss right now.
All right. Well, that's a great place to wrap up. I will say
this is the perfect place.
It's like my grandmama always said, when the two podcasters are full of piss, you end the pod.
It's Laura.
Giuseppe. And I go, my name's Andy, grandmama. He's like, Giuseppe.
It's just Andy.
All right. You guys know our shit, Baby Mermaid. You guys know where the fuck I'm at. Check it all out. Until next time, we love you all. Be about it. Peace.